Dawn, this is your second book, your first novel, correct?
That is correct.
The Remnants of Summer. How is this book different in the writing process, I'm wondering, from your memoir? Because the first one was a memoir.
Yes, this book actually in the writing came first. I started it over 30 years ago, and it was a quiet fiction book when I conceived it, and I circulated it over the years. So I tried to get it out there in the market, but it was at a time when things were shifting to nonfiction. So, and it was written, it was conceived right after I got out of grad school and I wanted to write a novel, coming of age novel set in Michigan where I'd grown up. What happened when I was writing it is that both of my parents died very close together. And it ended up being a way for me to process my grief, albeit a long way for me to process my grief. I dwell on things a little bit. But it's fitting that it was published during a year with so much, or during a couple years with so much grief for our nation with COVID and political upheaval in the country and elsewhere. I honor that about it, but what had happened more recently is that I was diagnosed with stage 4 lung cancer, which prompted me to write the memoir, which I did not consider a genre that I was trained in.
Harder or easier, or when you make it fiction than writing about yourself, was it any different in that sense?
Yes, I would say so, because since I was trained as a novelist, I was used to dealing with chapters and fictional dialogue and things like that. The memoir was written in very short pieces, and it grew out of journal entries. So I considered the novel more long form, although in a final last couple of years revision process, the novel also got short chapters as opposed to the long chapters that I had originally written it in. I think there's a lot more dialogue in the novel just because I'm much more comfortable with dialogue in a fiction setting. In memoir, since I wasn't trained in it, it was really hard for me to let myself try and appropriate the language of a scene because I just worried about, doesn't it have to be completely accurate, which of course it can't be most of the time unless you have a photographic memory.
Memory is a faulty thing.
It is. It is. And that's why I'm ultimately more comfortable with the novel incorporating some of my memories from childhood, but still being very fictional because I don't trust memory that much, especially for things that happened, you know, when I was young and I wanted to embellish them and create new characters and things like that.
Well, as you say, it's based on your childhood. Give us a synopsis of what Remnants of Summer is about. Introduce us to some of your characters, maybe not all of them, but certainly Iris, Scott, some of your main characters.
So Iris, as the novel begins, is a 14-year-old. She's starting out her summer, which is usually spent at a neighborhood beach that's a couple streets off of where she lives. And I wanted Iris to have the setting of a working class environment. So the beach is a neighborhood thing that you can buy into. And while she's hanging out, she falls asleep in the sun and her younger brother disappears. And it turns out that he has drowned. And she feels responsible. So much of the novel deals with the following summer when Iris and her older sister Liz have returned to school. So it's almost like the grief over the death of the brother Scott takes place the following summer. So it's been postponed in a way. And it's a repetitive process where Iris has to keep on coming back to the issue of her guilt, of how her parents and her older sister Liz feel about her and the ways in which she feels that she's failed Scott and is failing other people in her life. And woven within that were some of the episodes that I thought about a lot when I was 14 and older in terms of Vietnam and MIAs, and there was a child abduction event that took place in my childhood that I wanted to write about, which was never solved, the Oakland County child killer. I wanted to sort of mix in those dark things along with Iris's grief to just show the real danger of coming of age. It's so painful, and yet it can happen in a beautiful backdrop of lakes and summer fun and things like that.
It's interesting to me that, and I've seen that in my own life experience, when people are going through grief, not everyone, but a lot of people, whether it's directly the people going through grief or the people around them wondering how best to handle it, that nobody talks about the lost one. And in Iris's family, some of her frustration, a lot of her frustration seems to be that her family won't talk about Scott. And she wants them to get mad at her, yell at her, we blame you. Because of that, it's almost harder for her to handle her own grief. What are your thoughts on that?
I think that's true. I think that I wanted to highlight communication and how really difficult it is, and how, you know, family personalities can contribute to that if there's a sense of stoicism, like we just have to, you know, buckle down and deal with this, or if I could envision parents wanting to protect a child from their own anger and just not wanting to go there, not wanting to remember the lost person. And I think Iris is so seeped in this grief that she's almost prodding her parents or poking at them and her sister as well to say, okay, we've got to get this out in the open, because I can't deal with this closed subject when I need to process.
And then your story also deals with the marriage of Iris's parents and how they deal with the grief. Well, it's through Iris's eyes mostly, but grief over a lost child can often break a marriage up as well.
Yes, and I have known people in that situation, some people who stayed together and some people who did not. And either way, it's completely understandable. It's just such a painful thing for people to deal with. I myself did not lose a younger brother, but losing my parents at a formative time in my life when I had just had a baby and was expecting another one. I mean, with a couple years in between. I think losing this sort of collective sense of what a family unit is, when you move away from your original family unit, you know, that's a transition. But then to be having children, bringing them into the world, and then to have that older generation sort of wiped out in your nuclear family, I think that's profound also. It's a different kind of grief, certainly. I think the death of a child is so hard to process, but I also struggled mightily for many years with my parents' death. And you know, divorce is a kind of death too. So I kind of wanted to capture that it could go either way. Who knows?
And as you said earlier, life doesn't stop just because you're grieving. Things keep happening. And you bring in the topic of sexual molestation of young girls. And in fact, with that background thread through there about this killer that doesn't get captured, you almost wonder if the person that comes in contact with Iris and her friend Rosemary, that he's a suspicious figure. Did you intend that, or is that just me?
No, I think I intended it, because I think we've learned, certainly, you know, by recognizing with the Me Too movement, but also in life in general, I think we've learned that we don't know where danger is coming from.
Yeah.
And I think that's the hardest thing for a teenager to deal with, is that their brains, their bodies are still maturing, and they can't always sense where danger is coming from. All they can have feelings and inklings, but they don't know whether to trust them or not. So there's always this ambiguity. Where is the biggest danger? And I wanted to capture that too, the not knowing.
And not only the not knowing, but also, which I think is typical, especially of such young girls, but of grown women too, that wondering, did I bring this on? Did I do something? Was I okay with this? Did I want this? So you weave that in there very well also.
Well, thank you. Yes, I did want to do that because I do think that happens for women. And I've known enough cases just in my own, personal collection of friends and relatives and friends' daughters that there's always a second guessing on the part of the young woman. And that's sad. It's really sad.
And I'm wondering, too, let's go a little bit more into your life, Dawn. How did you become a writer? I understand you had that interest very early on in life. In fact, wanted to write, I was fascinated with a book about asthma in elementary school.
Yes, I was first generation college. And I think when you grow up and you have these impulses, you don't know where they come from. So certainly my mother was wonderful about getting me to the library all the time. Mm. And I just, I just was always scribbling when I was younger, and I wrote little things about neighbors and submitted them to Reader's Digest and things like that. And I had been fascinated the more I started to learn about my asthma. So I'd wanted to do that. And by the time I got to high school, I realized, I keep on going back to this. I keep on going back to this. But I was also very interested in science, so I didn't know for sure that I wanted to pursue the course of a writer. I also thought maybe I could be a doctor or a biologist. But by the time I applied to college, I applied for a partial scholarship through English, and I received it, and I needed to declare an English major, and I was going to add another major, and I just never did because I spent so much time in my English classes because I just loved them so much.
Yeah, follow the heart. That's the best way. Although you've worked in a lot of different careers. I saw that in your bio.
Yeah, it's the day job. If you're a writer, and there's no guarantees. I mean, lots of people with PhDs can find work, but unless you go to the terminal level, I think if you're an artist, you're usually patching together day jobs, and sometimes that works out, and you get the magic one that you can earn a living from for a big chunk of time. But in my case, it was always a lot of jobs cobbled together.
Your father would tell you that writing was a big mistake. Why did he say that, and did he ever change his mind?
Well, I think he was very practical, and he had a job at General Motors, and he thought we should go into fields that...
that actually pay?
That paid, yes. And so he wanted us all... He was so prescient. He's just so smart. He wanted us all to go into computers. He said it's going to be the next big thing. Mm. And, certainly he was right, but that wasn't where my heart was.
Yeah.
And so when I got a fellowship to go to grad school and called him and told him on the phone that they were going to pay me to go to school, he was blown away. He said, they're going to pay you. I'm glad that he didn't have to experience, my later quagmires where I was trying to pay bills because I was indulging this writing habit.
Any upcoming events, Dawn, that you want to tell us about?
Oh, certainly. I'm going to be at the East Lansing Library. I believe it's virtual, September 16th. And right now, I think that's about it. Oh, I did my launch at BookBub. Actually, I have a couple connections to Kalamazoo. One is that I studied for a semester with Stuart Dybeck at Western. Mm. And then my son went to Kalamazoo College. So I would trek over there frequently. And that's how I developed the affinity for the BookBub. And now this is a bookstore, because it was right on the road that I would go to.
Then you know some of our treasures here.
Yes, yes. I love those bookstores. Now, I haven't been anywhere else, any other bookstores in Kalamazoo, but in general, I love the area. I wanted to say, too, I was interested in reading about your writing because I'm Lutheran, and our church shares space with the Latvian Lutherans.
Yes.
And so when I read that you've written books in that language, I was so totally impressed.
That was my first language. You actually have to be impressed if I write in English.
Wow. That is really something.
Dawn, I have to ask you about your health. How is your health these days?
Well, it's pretty good. Last year in August, I switched to a new drug after being on the old drug for 8 years. And it was a scary risk, but the old drug was starting to fail me and tumors were starting to grow, it looks like. So I've been on the new drug for a year and I'm feeling pretty good. I have fewer side effects. So that's wonderful.
Yeah. Well, a scary experience to go through for you, for so many. Do you think there might be another memoir coming out of it, part two?
I don't know. I need to think about what I want to say. And what happens now when I write is, and when I plan projects, I just keep switching back and forth between the three genres, poetry, fiction, and essay. So I have to find what's interesting me most and then decide. I have a writing mentor who said, sometimes you just have to pick a thing and decide to do it.
Kind of made me think about your character, Iris, and how she uses painting, both painting in a house and art murals as part of her healing process, painting being artistic expression and artistic expression for you as well.
Yes, I meant to say that the person who did the cover for my book, Barbara Ranilovich, she grew up in Kalamazoo for about 20 years. I don't know that she was born there, but she's done art in Kalamazoo and she does art for Big Bees. So she was able to look at some pictures that I had taken of my old beach when I walked past there last summer and transform it to the cover of my book, which was really rewarding for me. And I'm not good at painting, but I live vicariously through her painting and pottery life and try to imagine that I could have those skills if I tried, but I don't think so.
Well, thank you for spending some time with us, Dawn. And the book, I assume, is available in all of these bookstores still, yes? Here in Kalamazoo.
Is. Yeah. It is available all over the place and at libraries, too. So thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate your interviewing me.